So this is our first study, or our first meeting in our camp meeting in South Australia, 1992. I will, in a later study, give you a report of the camp meetings that have transpired this year. I will not start with it this time. And in this report you will see in more detail why we study what we are studying, how the theme came into being. Now, the theme for this year will be around the image of the beast and what God's answer to the image of the beast is. That is the theme, in short. So you know everything, and we can stop. No, that's not so. Let us now turn to the book of Revelation and see some principles described there. We have the description of the image of the beast in several places, really. The most famous place would be Revelation 13. I think you know this all very well. In the first verses of Revelation 13, we have the description of the beast, really, how it's received its deadly wound, or how one of his heads received a deadly wound, how it was healed, and then all who dwell upon the earth shall worship him. Verse 8, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So that clearly shows that all people in the world shall be included in that. Revelation 13, verse 8, all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. All. So you and me too. There's one exception, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So that verse shows us very clearly that there will be only two classes in the world, that are those who worship the beast or its image, and those whose names are written in the book of the Lamb of Life. There's no neutral position. Today, of course, we have many people in the world who do not even confess that their names are written in the books of life. At the same time, they don't want to have any to do with churches or religion, and they are very tolerant to all religions and also to us. But at that time we will find that it is not so. All will worship him. Then it continues a little bit and talks especially of the image beast from verse 10 onwards, or rather verse 11 onwards. But before we read this now, we also find God's answer described in this verse. You know that? In this chapter. In Revelation 13. You know where? In verse 10. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. And now comes a declaration of God's answer to the image of the beast. Here is the patience of the and the faith of the saints. The patience and the faith of the saints. That is God's answer. There's much contained in that few verses, more than you just can think about in a few moments, and we will have a whole camp meeting about this. In Revelation 14, we have also a description of the image of the beast, especially in the third angel's message, which I think you all know very well. Let's read it together, verse 9 and following. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image, and any men that are all, except those whose names are written in the book of life. If any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascendeth up for ever and ever, and they have no rest, day nor night, who worship the beast and his image, and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name. That is one of the most terrible judgments that is described in the Bible, wherever you find it. And it is difficult to fathom, really, the sufferings that are described here. Some people have suffered not being able to sleep at night, and have been very near to a nervous breakdown, maybe even, and they know hard it is to bear, not to be able to sleep day or night, to suffer all the time a terrible stress. Today, people often, when they turn away from the Bible or from the truth into the world, they say, so I'm lost. That's me. I'm lost. And I wonder how easy they can say this. Because if they would really understand what this would mean to be lost, they couldn't say it so easily. And one day they will understand and terribly regret, which does not change their fate really, because their decision must be made in all freedom, not under the pressure of, of threatenings. That's right. On the other hand, it is necessary that we understand at least something of the situation in which we find ourselves when we reject God's invitation of mercy. And therefore, the warning of the third angel's message is given. It must be something terrible, the setting up of the image of the beast, mustn't it? And such threatenings are against it. So it is not just some scheme of men amongst other schemes. It is the opposition against God. It is the apostasy, the greatest that has ever occurred. It is the summary of all apostasies that we ever had on this world, in this world. Therefore, the result reaped from that apostasy is the most terrible that has ever been found. And what is God's solution to that problem? What is God's answer to that problem of the image of the beast? Again, we read in verse 12, where it is said, here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Can you see that this coincides very much with verse 10 in Revelation 13? It's the same wording almost, and it's the same principle that is described here, and that is the patience of the saints. Again, let's read in verse 10. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And in verse 12, here is patience of the saints. That is to say, in other words, what is necessary against the image of the beast is the patience of the saints. That is necessary. Without it, you will be a worshipper of the image of the beast. Now, we need to understand, and I think we will come to a much deeper understanding of this, that the worshipping of the image of the beast is not something that only those who are very blind fall into. We all can be candidates for the worship of the image of the beast very easily. And it will be a time in which many of us will worship the image of the beast. Now you may say, but we understand that the Sabbath, the seventh day of the Sabbath, we understand that we don't worship on Sunday. So when they come and try to establish Sunday worship, we surely won't be on their side. We will toughly stand for the Sabbath, will we? So that is what we think. But we will find that the issue is not so simple as this. It is a very great temptation that comes upon each one of us and upon each soul on the face of the globe, and especially upon the saints. And only those who really have the patience of the saints can stand that test. And this truth is also described in the letter to the Philadelphian church, which we will open now. Revelation chapter 3. And this letter starts in verse 7, where it says, and to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the keys of David, the key of David, he that openeth and no man shutteth, and shutteth and no man openeth. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. For thou hast a little strength, and has kept my word, and has not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews, and are not to, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know that I have loved thee. Now, these promises that are given to that church are all last time promises, you know? Every one of it. And that shows very clearly that the Philadelphia church is the last church. Not the Laodicea church, but the Philadelphia. Why is then the Laodicea after the Philadelphia? It is very simple. There should never have been a seventh church if God's people would have come through. We will give evidence of this in a short while. But I just want to mention this fact here to show very clearly that the verses described in the sixth church are all verses of the last events, of the very last events of this earth history. In fact, things that lie before us, with the exception maybe of that verse which tells us that Christ has opened a door and no man can shut, and shut a door and no man can open. Which door has he opened for us? Yeah, the door into the heavenly sanctuary, the most holy, where we find him still as our mediator at this moment. But let's turn now to verse 10. Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I will also keep thee from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. So what temptation will it be that tries all the world? There must be one temptation that tries all the world. Has there been ever such a temptation in the world? Well, surely? Noah's time, right? That would be. There, everybody was tested. Every person on the earth either went into the ark or did not. There was no one who did not go into the ark and survived. And here again, but apart from this, has there ever been such a worldwide test? Not really. The gospel has been preached practically in all the world in Paul's time, but not really in all the worlds when we consider the global aspects as we see it today. So, has there ever been a temptation which came upon all the world, apart from that event that I mentioned? When will this be? When must this come? It must come in the last times. It must come as a result of the message being preached in all the world. Because without the enlightenment of the truth, there comes no test. A principle which I also will dwell on a little bit later. First there comes the truth, and then comes the test. Without the truth, there is no real test. That is, if a person unwittingly commits a wrong act, this is not so serious. But if in the face of light he sins, that is really a serious thing. So what time will this then be, when there's a temptation in all the world? Yeah, it will be together with a loud cry, and it will be certainly that temptation what we have read about in Revelation 13 and 14. It will be when everyone wanders after the beast. Or how did we read this in the English version? Let me again look in Revelation 13, verse 8. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So it again must talk about this event when the image of the beast is set up. That is a temptation that goes to all the world. And who alone can stand that test? Who alone will be kept in the hour of that temptation? That's right. In verse 10, Revelation 3 it said, because thou hast kept the word of my patience, that is the patience of the saints, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation. So let us see very clearly that the answer of God to the image of the beast is essential in order not to worship it. Nobody who does not have the answer to the image of the beast will be able to escape this temptation. Everybody who does not have the answer to the image of the beast will worship it. Every single person. So it is very important that we understand what answer God has to that image of the beast. But before we do so, we need to look into what the image of the beast really is. Now, that is a term very often used. And when I was a young person, like some of you children, and I was sitting in the Sabbath school of the Adventist church where I went to, and the old people were talking about the image of the beast, I was understanding not very much. I was understanding as much as I would speak German now to you, and you would understand it. Most of you, some would understand me. So it was a very foreign thing for me, and when they talked about prophecy and the king so, I thought, oh, that is where, if I one day understand that, I really will be a very wise man like they are. But when the gospel came to me, I found it not to be so difficult after all. And today I think even the children can understand that. Okay, let's read Revelation 13, shall we? Together and endeavor to understand it step by step. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth was as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. Now, this beast that comes out of the sea must represent some very powerful power in the world. What would be a world power today? For example, not that, yeah, but yes, the United States of America would be a world power. What makes them a world power?
Money, people, what?
Money, people, yeah. And weaponry. To say it in short, the sword, doesn't it? That makes them a world power. As President Bush said, the United States are the only power in the world that can send, that can make such a mission like in Somalia. He said it in different words now, but something like that. He boasted of the fact that they are the only one who have set such a weaponry and has such a worldwide extent of their weaponry. And that is true. Everybody recognizes that makes them a power. Now the Bible gives acknowledgement to this fact to a certain extent by also calling them great beasts that have great power, like a dragon. You imagine a dragon is a very powerful being, don't we? Or like a bear, like a lion. All these are very powerful beasts and we wouldn't like to meet them without protection. So likewise, these powers, like the United States of America today, we wouldn't like to meet them when they are angry. We all understand this. And each country understands this, and therefore when they threaten, they become very obedient suddenly. And so there have been powers in the past, like Babylon has been a power like the United States today, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, they all have been very strong powers. Now that particular power which it talks here of in Revelation 13, we shall see, is a religious power. Now, before we read on, the dragon gave him this power. Who is the dragon? That is the devil. This we know from Revelation 12, where he is described very clearly. Maybe we should read verse 3. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, the great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads, and so forth. With his tail, he drew the third part of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And this dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And then in verse 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So, the dragon is the devil, and he gave power to that beast. Let's read on a little bit. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast, who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. So it is not just confined in using the sword, but it also blasphemes. Who? God, his name, and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. Now when we consider this fact, then we very quickly see that this power is a religious power. The devil gives power to that religious power. Therefore we can see that power, say that power is a representative of the devil. As we want to be and shall be and are representatives of God, so this power is a representative of the devil. Whatever that power does, the devil does, who stands behind it. in principle, that is really the devil. It's his character that is expressed in there, and it's his ways. And he will be able to exert such a power through his agent, this beast, that all the world will worship it and say, who has power to go against it? Nobody. Now this is an event that partly lies in the past, but only partly. It mostly lies in future. Then we shall really see how powerful that beast can become. Now, has there been a power in the past that used the sword and at the same time was religious? Has there been such a power? Nebuchadnezzar? The papacy, yeah. Of course, Nebuchadnezzar too, to a certain extent, but never has this been exemplified so clearly as in the papacy. Here we have a religious power that used the sword, didn't it? Even if the priests themselves didn't carry a sword with them, sometimes they carried a short sword. How do you call this in English? Dolch? Pardon?
Dagger.
Okay, under their coat. But this they didn't always. Anyways, they pretended to be very without sword. But how did they use the sword? That's right, they went to somebody else and said, you use the sword for us. We don't want to make our hands dirty, you do it. It's like the mafia boss who sits in his room and has his little men who do the work for him. It's the same thing. Now that is using the sword as much as I would carry it myself and would execute it myself, isn't it? If I give orders to somebody else. So, however, the picture seems to be better, more in favor of somebody who does not use the sword himself. And so likewise, the church today is able to really give the impression in the world as though she has always been a power of peace, while in reality it has been a power of the sword. Now what made it to be a power of the sword? That is very interesting for us to know. And we read this in the Great Controversy, especially on page 443. We will study this together now, and we endeavor to understand what made the church a power that used the sword. What made it thus? And don't think that we want just to point our fingers to somebody else and say, look what bad people that were in the past. We want to understand how they became thus as a warning that we can also become this. Because everybody who worships the image of the beast in this last times will be a person who uses in some way or another the sword. And so we all can become persons who will use the sword. A terrible thought, isn't it? Something that we really disdain. Can you see yourself taking up a sword and killing somebody? It's hard to imagine. But even if he would not do it personally, we still would receive a character to do it, which means to do it practically. Very true. And this we will see now. So let us turn to page 443 in the book The Great Controversy. There the question is asked, but what is the image to the beast? Maybe we should go a little bit back to say, here she describes the lamb-like beast, and before that she describes the beast. The chapter is God's Law Immutable. I don't know if I shall read everything to you. That would be too much now. It starts on page 433. Maybe I begin to read on page 439. In chapter 13, verse 1 to 10, is described another beast like unto a leopard, to which the dragon gave his power and his seed and great authority. This symbol, as most Protestants have believed, represents the papacy, which succeeded to the power and seed and authority once held by the ancient Roman Empire. So here we have it in very clear words. Which power is it? It is the papacy. Of the leopard-like beast, it is declared, there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he openeth his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations, This prophecy, which is nearly identical with the description of the little horn of Daniel 7, unquestionably points to the papacy. Then we find in Revelation 13, verse 12 and onwards, verse 11 and onwards, another beast that comes from the earth. It has two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. Do you know who is represented for this? That is Protestant America. And you also read this here in the Great Controversy, page 439 again. At this point, another symbol is introduced. Says the prophet, I beheld another beast coming out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb. Both the appearance of this beast and the manner of its rise indicate that the nation which it represents is unlike those presented under the preceding symbol. The great kingdoms that have ruled the world were presented to the prophet Daniel as beasts of prey rising when the four winds of heavens were strong upon the sea, on the great sea. In Revelation 17, an angel exclaimed that waters represent peoples, and multitudes and nations and tongues. Winds are a symbol of strife. The four winds of heavens driving upon the great sea represents terrible scenes of conquest and revolution by which kingdoms have attained to power. But the beast with lamb-like horns was seen coming up out of the earth. Instead of overthrowing other powers to establish itself, the nation thus represents must arise in a territory previously unoccupied and grow up gradually and peacefully. It could not then arise among the crowded and struggling nationalities of the old world. The turbulent sea of peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues, it must be sought in the western continent. I often wondered a little bit about this when I thought of the Red Indians who were in that territory. But these people, you know, they did not claim the ground as their own property. That's an interesting fact. They were there and they moved from place to place usually, and they considered everything common property. They didn't say that is my property. And when the whites came and offered the money for this, they marveled at this. How can they offer us money for something that doesn't belong to us? They said, of course, they took it because it was money for them, but it was very little for the ground. Yeah, today, because they are westernized, so to speak. But according to their original understanding, the place they lived was common ground. It was not their property. Okay, now, so we have here a nation that rose up practically peacefully, and it had two horns. This we read on page 441 then. The lamb-like horns indicate youth, innocence, and gentleness, fitly representing the character of the United States when presented to the prophet as coming up in 1798. But the beast with the lamb-like horns spoke like a dragon, that is like the devil. And this will be true especially when the image of the beast is set up. Then it will really speak like a dragon. And that is still yet future. Then we come to page 443. But what is the image to the beast? And how is it to be formed? The image is made by the two-horned beast and is an image to the beast. It is also called an image of the beast. Then to learn what the image is like and how it is to be formed, we must study the characteristics of the beast itself, the papacy. Now, the word image of the beast, or the word image, can have two meanings, obviously. For example, when I make a wooden statue and worship it, it's called an image, isn't it? Or an idol. Is it such an image, the image of the beast? No. Certainly not. Because that image of the beast is alive. It is not a dead thing. This point is made very clear in verse 15, or verse 14 rather. Well, verse 14 begins, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that they shall make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark on their foreheads. So, what does the image of the beast have? It has life. and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. So it's not a dead image. Now what else do we call an image? Yeah. For example, when we look into the mirror, what do we see? An image. That's right. When I told this to the English believers, when you look in the mirror, what do you see? They said, a beast. No, we see ourselves. We see an image of ourselves, isn't it? We see an image of ourselves. So the image of the beast is a reproduction of the beast. That is the argument of Sister White. Then to learn what the image is like and how it is to be formed, we must study the characteristics of the beast itself, the papacy. So when the image is a reproduction of the original, then we can study the original in order to find out what the reproduction is like. So when we want to look into the future, we look in the past, in other words. History will be repeated. Okay? Now let us look step by step how the beast was formed, and that shall teach us how the image of the beast is formed. Page 443. When the early church became corrupted by departing from the simplicity of the gospel and accepting heathen rites and customs, she lost the spirit and power of God. And in order to control the consciences of the people, she sought the support of the secular power. The result was the papacy, a church that controlled the power of the state and employed it to further her own ends, especially for the punishment of heresy. In order for the United States to form an image of the beast, the religious power must so control the civil government that the authority of the state will also be employed by the church to accomplish her own ends. So where does the beast and the image beast start? With what? Go back. What was it originally? A church. It starts with a church. And that should give us much thoughts, much food of thoughts. It started with people like us. So we are potentially the worst enemies of God's cause. Potentially. Which is quite a frightening thought if you think about this. It was once the church of God, which finally became the worst persecutor of God's people, which became the greatest power of evil in the world. It was not a heathen nation. It was not something who was very far away. It was not Egypt, that mighty power, that mighty king who said, who is the God that I should serve him, who became the worst enemy, but those who were once the church of God. And this truth is also expressed in the next paragraph, or the paragraph after the next, on page 443 and following. It was apostasy that led the early church, that pure church, that powerful church, which had the outpouring of the early rain, the mighty manifestation of the Holy Spirit, it was apostasy that led the early church to seek the aid of the civil government, and this prepared the way for the development of the papacy, the beast. Said Paul, there shall come a falling away, and that men of sin be revealed. So apostasy in the church will prepare the way for the image to the beast. So it's not those who are very far away who are those who really prepare the way for the image of the beast, but those who are in the church, because it's apostasy in the church. And church means not any church, not Satan's church or the Scientologic church or whatever. It is the church, which is the church of God. Apostasy in the church will prepare for the image of the beast. Now, the Satan's church cannot apostatize, can they? They're already, that's right, they're already at the lowest level, you can say. Also, the other churches who have rejected the truth long, long ago, they are really not considered here because their apostasy is almost full. But here we have a church that apostatizes, and that prepares the way for the image of the beast. Now, what does apostasy mean? How does it come about? It's departing from God. How else can we describe it? Departing from the power of the gospel. That is very good. Yeah. Separation from the source. Well, I want to make one point, and this we will study in more detail later, and this is, in order to be able to apostatize, I must have had great light. The greater the light, the greater the apostasy, really. It is rejection of light, exactly. Rejection of light, that is apostasy. And that is contained in, or that contains everything that you said, really. Everything what you said is true. It's separation from God. It is separation from the truth. It is everything that leads on the pathway of Satan. Now, let's read again the first sentence of that which, with which we started. When the early church became corrupted by departing from the simplicity of the gospel and accepting heathen rites and customs, she lost the spirit and power of God. We want to separate these two things for the moment, the spirit and the power of God. They are two different things that belong together always. But let us ask the question, was the church aware of her loss of the spirit of God? Was the church aware of her loss of the power of God? Yes. I will give you evidence of this later. If you consider the power of God a spiritual power, then it is true she was not aware of that. But she was very much aware of the fact that she did not have the attraction anymore as she had in her early times. For that reason she turned to the civil powers. She would never have turned to the civil powers if she would not have been aware of her loss of power. A church only that is aware of her loss of power turns to the civil states or to the sword. And likewise with us. Whenever you and me are aware that we do not have power, where will we turn to? To the sword. Always. To those who have the power. Exactly. And this is the principle of the image of the beast. And how easily is it erected? How often we are aware of our little power, aren't we? And if you ask the people today, who is the suppressed one? Everybody thinks I am. The rich people up there, the politicians, they do what they want. And I am the poor guy who is suppressed all the time. People are very much aware of their little power they have, aren't they? And this leads them to seek for the sword, which will be worldwide very soon. But about these principles we shall study more tomorrow and so on. Now we have to close as our time is over.